You're listening to CJLO News. A homeless shelter in Cabot Square, Montreal, was one of the buildings affected by flooding earlier this week. The shelter says they experience frequent flooding and are in need of greater city support. On Sunday, July 13th, Montreal experienced flash floods due to heavy rainfall, which closed roads, backed up pipes, and even destroyed four family homes. In Cabot Square area, Resilience Montreal, a homeless shelter focused on extreme cases of chronic homelessness and harm reduction, experienced rapid flooding that destroyed donated goods. Volunteers have been able to pump out most of the sewage from the basement, and the clients in the shelter are safe. Resilience Montreal says that since opening the shelter in 2019, they have experienced 15 floods. We met their logistics director, Jessica Lee, in an alley behind the center.
A lot of the times we end up losing a lot of our products. Like the other day when it flooded, we had to throw out all our toilet paper because it was left on the ground, because that's where we store things sometimes, you know, because we have no choice because we have very limited space. But we have to get rid of, like, we got rid of a box of shoes. We had to get rid of clothes because we can't redistribute it because it's sewage water, you know, and we don't want our community members to get sick. I wouldn't want to wear that. Would you want to wear that? No.
Lee says the flooding damage challenges an already struggling organization.
We go without and we make do, but it's hard. And we have to turn away some people sometimes because we don't have all the hygiene products or we don't have clothes.
David Chapman is the director of Resilience Montreal. He gave us a tour of the shelter and a colorful description of the flooding.
In the bathrooms, in the floor drains, basically turn into sprinkler systems. And the water just, it comes out with such force that often it hits the walls. Mm. And you just end up with like in an instant, you've got like a number of sprinklers running in your basement all at the same time.
Montreal's Office of Public Consultation, the OCPM, recommended the city, quote, substantially increase funding for community services, unquote, in a report made earlier this month. The report made 22 recommendations, many of them focusing on increasing support for harm reduction and on-the-ground services like Resilience Montreal. Chapman hopes to see these recommendations implemented.
If we don't get adequate operational funding, we're continually, you know, basically, you can't reassure staff that your services are going to continue.
Right.
Because you're always, like, just a few months away from going below zero.
For the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Adam Innes.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Tommy John Show here on CJLO 1690 AM in Montreal. Hope everyone's doing well. Man, what a show we got for you guys today. What a show. If you are new to the program, this is the Tommy John Show where we discuss everything going on in the world of sports. Wow. Wow, wow, wow. Crazy week. We had the final major of the year in golf wrap up. We'll get into that. Baseball is back post the All-Star break, and the Blue Jays got a huge sweep. We will get into that. They still lead the way in the American League East. And the NFL, it's right around the corner. Training camp's a few weeks away, and the preseason only a few weeks away. And we got big storylines already. We will get into all of that. And we will also break down some big news in college football. It is around the corner. And all everyone's talking about is Arch Manning in Texas. We will get into all of it over the next hour here on the Tommy John Show. And if you're new to the program, you can follow us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, you name it. The Tommy John Show is on it. So if you could give us a follow, subscribe, do whatever it's called to support the channel, we would greatly appreciate that. So why don't we start off with just quickly recapping golf's final major of the year. And last week we went on and on and on about how this should not be the last major of the year. The PGA should be in August. It's to have no more majors post July 20th. Is nuts. We're not like, why? And I know we discussed it last week. We won't get into it again, how they want to promote the FedEx Cup playoffs and the FedEx Cup, and they don't want to go into NFL season because they'll get killed in the ratings. We understand that. But golf fans will watch anything. And when you really bring in the good rating is you bring in the average sports fan. Not the golf diehard, just someone who likes to watch sports. And nothing against the FedEx Cup. They can say that it's going to get there. It won't. They watch major championships. And to have all the major championships gone by July is crazy. And hopefully we get the PGA back in August. I doubt it will happen, but as a result, we are here not even in August, and there's no more majors until next April at Augusta National. That is our next major. We have to wait till April. We're July. So what is that, 9 months? We have to wait 9 months for the next golf major? We're in the summer, heart of summer. And yes, the Ryder Cup will have juice in September. And some people will be fired up about the FedEx Cup playoffs. But golf has so much momentum with what Scotty did this past weekend, with Rory completing the career slam. Ryder Cup in New York. There's a lot of energy and support around the game of golf right now. And just to have no huge tournaments until, I'm not even going to count the FedEx Cup, until the Ryder Cup in late September, that's an issue. That is a big issue for golf. They need to get that fixed. We went through it last weekend. We'll stop. We'll talk about the greatness of Scottie Scheffler. But just have to say, I cannot believe that is the last major of the year. We already flown by it, all the majors. And here we are, Scottie Scheffler once again winning another major championship. And it's starting to get, I don't want to say out of hand, because he only has four. This is his fourth major championship. But he won his first event in 2022. So since 2022, Scottie Scheffler has won 17 times. He's won four major championships. He's a U.S. Open away from completing the career Grand Slam. He's won a FedEx Cup. He's won Olympic gold. He's won two Players. He's won Bay Hill. He's won the Memorial several times. It's not like a Brooks Koepka run, because people are trying to compare it to Tiger, and okay, fair enough, but Tiger did it over a decade period. He won 14 majors in that, from what, 97 to 08, he won 15 majors and 70-something events before the second half of his career, second part, whenever you want to call it, when he came back, won the Masters, won the Tour Championship, won the Zozo and stuff like that. But Tiger's prime, from 97 to 2008, He won 14 majors and over 70 tournaments. So obviously we can't compare it right now. But Scotty in this little window is playing as good of golf as anyone who's ever lived. Let's be honest. He's never out of position. He hits his irons better than anyone since Tiger. And the one knock on Scheffler was, well, he can't putt. You know, the one saving grace for the rest of the field is he's not a great putter. Well, now Scottie Scheffler is rolling the rock pretty darn well, and he is blowing away the field. So this year alone, remember he had the hand injury in December, so he got off to a slow start. Didn't play his best out in Hawaii. Didn't play, in California. He didn't play Hawaii. Didn't have his best stuff out at the Genesis or the other big one, they did a Pebble Beach, did not have his best stuff. Was okay in the Florida swing, but he wasn't winning any golf tournaments. And then he won the Byron Nelson when he was like 30 under par. He did that right after the Masters. Then won the PGA Championship to get his third major. Then he goes to the Memorial, which was playing very tough that weekend in Ohio. Dominated that. And then he goes and plays pretty well at the Oakmont, but the weather was brutal. He had his chances on the back nine when the leaders were stumbling. He finishes in the top 10, like he always does. And then he goes overseas. He has a bit of frustration in Scotland. And then he goes over to the final major of the year. And he, I know he only won by four shots, but he destroyed the field. Like, that was not even competitive. It was over. And I was looking forward to this weekend. But it was over. Once he had the lead going into the weekend, like there was not a chance in hell. And I like Matt Fitzpatrick, and he's a major champion, won a U.S. Open a few years ago. He's a good player. Brian Harman, he's won an Open Championship. He's a good player. Rory was too far back. I know he was in the mix, but he's the only player who's sort of on Scotty's level right now. He shot decent rounds to stay somewhat in the mix, but not really a high chance. Scottie Scheffler, he got the good draw in the morning. The weather wasn't bad on Thursday. Got a decent little break in the weather on Friday. He was 10 under par going into the weekend, and that was pretty much the ball game, right? That was it. He had a one-shot lead going into Saturday, played great on Saturday, and then it was over going into Sunday. I didn't know anyone who thought Hao Tung Lee and the final group was going to challenge Scottie Scheffler. It was a formality. He was going to win the golf tournament. And now, Scottie, like we mentioned, to win away from the career Grand Slam, and he's putting together another Hall of Fame caliber season. Think about it. Look what he's 2022. He won what? Bay Hill. He won the Masters. He won the match play. Remember, he was winning everything into the Masters, and then he won the Masters, and I was like, oh my God, that's like his third, fourth win in a row. And then he just kind of coasted the rest of the year. Then 2023. Oh, he didn't get a major. He didn't get a major, but he still won a boatload of times. Won the Players. Won other events. Last year was the best year of his career. I lost track of how many times he won last year. It was nuts. Won the Players, won the Masters, won Olympic gold, won the FedEx Cup. I think he won the Memorial. Like, it was just going on and on and on and on. And then this year, when he gets off to the slow start and Rory got off to the start he did, Player of the Year was over. Rory winning at Pebble, winning at the Players, winning the career Grand Slam at Augusta. The player and Scottie didn't have a win yet. And since then, he's won four times and two major championships. And we still have the FedEx Cup left, where it's between him and Rory. But something tells me Rory doesn't care about the FedEx Cup anymore. He's won it three times. Scottie just plays great golf all the time. Whether he's playing at my local country club or he's playing at Augusta National, Scottie Scheffler is going to play golf the same way. Doesn't need to be mentally into it. It's just playing golf. And I know people brought up his comments he made earlier in the week where he said, oh, golf's not really everything for me. As soon as golf starts impacting my family life and doesn't make me a good father, I'm going to stop. That's who he is. And I think it helps him. I really do. If he cared so much, and he practices, don't get me wrong, it's not just God-given talent. He practices the hell out of golf, and he loves to play practice rounds. He loves to go on scouting trips way before tournaments. He just loves golf. But he says when he wins a golf tournament, he enjoys it for a little bit, and it's like, all right, on to the next one. These are all his words. And it helps him because he is just a machine right now. He doesn't think too much about winning. He just loves to practice and play his game. And if it's good enough, great. If not, we move on. And now he's on one of the great runs in the history of the sport. Just unbelievable what he has done in such a short period of time. He doesn't make any mistakes, and his caddy's phenomenal too. And was it Ted Scott? He's a phenomenal caddy. They're a great team. But I don't see how this guy doesn't win double-digit majors. Like, are we serious right now? He is unconscious. And if you look at his career wins, he won the Phoenix Open. So he won 1, 2, 3, 4 times his first year. Won the Phoenix Open, Arnold Palmer, the match play, Augusta. Then the next year, wins Phoenix again, the Players. Those were his two wins. And then last year, look at this last year. He won the player. He won the Arnold Palmer, won the Players, won the Masters, won the RBC Heritage, won the Memorial, won the Travelers, won the Tour Championship, and the Olympics. That was last year. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 victories last year with a major, a Players, and the Olympics. Then this year, oh, he's injured, his hand, and then Phil Mickelson has the dumb tweet. Oh, you know what it is? It's just, see, he's not going to win this year. Just hard to keep it up, Phil, with that dumb tweet. And since Phil tweeted that, won the Byron Nelson by 8 shots at 31 under par. Then wins the PGA Championship by 5 shots, wins the Memorial by 4, and then this weekend wins at Royal Portrush by 4 shots, minus 17. The guy is a machine. So won 17 times already, and it's not like he's into his mid to late 30s. He's not even 30. What is he, 28, 29? It's crazy. He's going to get better and better and better, which is scary. He's 29. He turned 29 last month. So he is locked in right now. He is by far the best player in the world. And I'm just excited to see what he does because he's going to win probably over 35, 40 times. That's not crazy to say. Maybe 40's pushing it. But he's going to win 3-4 times next year. And he's probably going to win 2 more times this year. He's probably going to win the FedEx Cup. He's going to win a FedEx Cup tune-up event. That puts him at 19. Next year, he's going to win 5-6 events. That puts him at 25. Like, he is that good of a player right now. And it's not crazy to say. It's not like you see players get on a run like we saw Jordan Spieth do 1 year and you anoint them. Oh, they're going to win 10 majors and all that stuff. Rory had a gap for not winning a major in 10 years. Scotty's track record. This is a pretty large sample size. This is 3-4 years now. He's going to win 5 times a year and he's going to win at least 1 major every single year. And let's just say he does that for the next 3 years. Wins 1 major a year, 5 more times. That's 15 more victories and 3 more majors. That gives him 7 majors and close to 40 PGA Tour wins. That's one of the great careers of all time. That's if he just for the next 3 years, for his year, what is he, 29 now? So that's 30, 31, 32. Would anyone blink an eye if Scotty won 15 more times over the next 3 years and 3 major championships? He won 2 majors this year. But it's hard to win multiple majors in a year. Let's just say he gets 1 a year for the next 3 years. 7 majors. Who knows if he completes the slam at the U.S. Open? That's another can of worms. See if he can do that, which he probably will. You look at the venues coming up. Shinnecock fits his game. Pebble Beach fits his game. Pinehurst fits his game. Like, he's going to have a lot of chances to close out that U.S. Open and complete the career slam. But he's probably going to get that done anyway. I'm just looking at if he wins 3 more majors, don't care where they are, and 5 times a year for the next 3 years, it's one of the great golf careers in recent memory. And now the only other player in his stratosphere is Rory. So we'll see if this kind of fires him up because he just won the career Grand Slam. That he's the player of our generation. He finally did it. The greatest player post-Tiger. All everything. And then now you have Scottie Scheffler who's looking to take that from him. Rory's at 20. He's at 30 wins on the PGA Tour, 29, 30. Scotty's already at 17. And Rory's got, what, 4 or 5 years left at this level? Trust me, this if this doesn't fire Rory up, then nothing will. He needed something to get him out of the funk. It was this tournament at Royal Portrush. It got him to play better golf, and he played much better the last 2 weeks than he did post-Augusta. He was awful, awful, awful in Canada. He wasn't much better at the PGA and all those other events. He was okay at the Travelers, but he's mentally not checked in post winning the career Grand Slam at Augusta. But if this doesn't motivate him, then nothing will. And it's fine. He's done. He's made a boatload of money. He can retire tomorrow. He's one of the 15 greatest players of all time. He's one of six to win the Slam. It's great. But trust me, a bit. If Rory has some fire left in him, it's I want to have a better career than Scotty, or at least put some distance between me and Scotty. I want to win 2-3 more majors to give me 8 to make it tough for him to go after it. But Scotty's going to win at least 7, at least. So it's disappointing that this is where it ends for golf this year until the Ryder Cup, which is going to be fantastic at Bethpage Black. Europe really kicked the hell out of them in Europe last time in Rome. So let's see if the Americans respond. It's not an all-star team in years past, but you do have the best player in the world, and then you have the possibility of Keegan Bradley, the captain, playing. So there's a lot of storylines for that, and that's good for golf. But not having a major championship is nuts. So we got to wait till Augusta next year, and that's going to be spectacular. Rory doing his champions dinner. A golf course that he always played well but never won at until last year. Is he in the mix? Can Scotty go and get his fifth major, his third green jacket? There's so many storylines, and we have to wait 9 months. We have to wait 9 months. Just the way it goes, eh? But a great golf tournament. Royal Portrush was a phenomenal venue, and they might go to other courses in Ireland now, which I think it's about time. I know it's the British Open, the Open Championship, and it was played in Northern Ireland, but they're looking at golf courses in Ireland. To me, that's just, it makes sense. You can do so many great venues all over the island. It would be fantastic. You do like a Lahinch, you do maybe do another one in Northern Ireland, Royal County Down. If you can do all those places, that would be awesome. It really would. But it was a great, great tournament. It was a really good leaderboard, too. You had Scotty, obviously. Rory was in the mix. Matt Fitzpatrick was in the mix. Brian Harmon, DeChambeau with a crazy comeback to finish in the top 10. It was a pretty good leaderboard. Xander Schauffele made a run on Sunday. So it was a good leaderboard, and it was a great way to cap off the major championship season in golf. Quickly over to tennis, and this National Bank Open, or we'll just call it the Canadian Open, is not getting any really star players on the men's side. Djokovic, Sinner, Alcaraz, Jack Draper, they're all not going to play in Toronto, which is a killer for the tournament. I know people are still going to go. In Toronto to watch the tennis, but having the three best, maybe even four best players in the world, if you include Jack Draper, not playing is a big blow. And I understand they're all tired of that crazy swing of Indian Wells into the clay court season, French Open, quick turnaround into Wimbledon. They want some time leading up to the U.S. Open. I understand that. But there is not a key player. With Zverev, maybe? Taylor Fritz might play. He plays pretty much every week, so that makes sense. But outside of that, it's not a great turnout for this tournament. You're still going to get some top 10 players, but the four big players, it's the three and Draper who's ranked in the top five. Them not being there is a big, big blow to the tournament. And it sucks because we love it's a great tennis country, Canada. Every time it's here, people show out and show up. There's a great environment, great buzz in Toronto and in Montreal when it's here. So that's really disappointing. Who knows? Maybe next year in Montreal they'll show up. But it's tough when you go to the finals of Wimbledon, you go to the finals of the French Open, or you're exhausted. And if you look at Alcaraz and Sinner, they were in the finals in Rome. They were in the finals at the French. They're in the finals in Wimbledon. And they got another major to get ready for. And they probably would rather play Cincinnati based on its scheduling than Canada, either in Montreal or in Toronto. That's the facts. So not having them is a huge blow to the tournament, but I will still be watching. I'll still be watching for sure. Speaking of tennis, Denis Shapovalov winning an ATP 250 over the weekend, and that's big for him. That's his second title this year. One earlier in the year in Dallas. Where is it? The MPHIL Tennis Open. So there were some good players in that tournament. There was Rublev was in there. They had some good players, and he really ran through the tournament. 6-1, 6-2 in the round of 16. Quarterfinals, he won 6-3, 6-2, 6-2, 6-2 in the semis, and 6-4, 6-2 in the final. So a very, very impressive week for Denis Shapovalov, and he's only 26 years of age. So I'm not saying he's going to win a major championship, but if he continue to play at this level, then he can make a decent run at the U.S. Open coming up. But if he plays like this and you win an event like Canada, it's the doors open for guys like that. The doors open for this Fonseca kid. The doors open for Shapovalov, Felix Auger-Aliassime, maybe Medvedev to get some points. Because Sinner and Alcaraz, they're dominating the sport right now. And with them out of the tournament, an ATP 1000 and Shapovalov playing the way he is, this is a chance to get some points and improve your seeding going into the U.S. Open. So I bet they like hearing that news. I bet they do. As the fans, we hate it. For the tennis players in the tournament, they're loving it. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the red-hot Toronto Blue Jays, who just came out of the All-Star break and swept the San Francisco Giants at home out of the break. And now they got a huge series this weekend against the New York Yankees, which should be fantastic. Three games at home against the Yankees. We'll preview that. And we'll also talk about what are the possible trade spots for players on the move. The Blue Jays are going to be in on players. The Yankees, or the Red Sox, they somehow pulled out a game yesterday at Wrigley Field. So the American League is really heating up. We'll get into that. And we'll also talk about the NFL. We have big news. The Jets signing Garrett Wilson, signing Sauce Gardner to big contract extensions. TJ Watt, remember that? Oh, he's going to get traded. He's going to get traded. Nonsense. He was never going to get traded. They come to agreement on a deal. So we will get into that as well. TJ Watt staying in Pittsburgh. We will talk about that all after the break here on the Tommy John Show. Back after this quick word from our sponsors. Do not go away.
At Cinema Public, we offer a theatrical program made up of local films and international new releases, classics and little-known nuggets, as well as short films and family screenings. Our tickets are among the cheapest in Montreal, $10 for a regular entry or $8 for students, children, and seniors. We also offer 6-ticket movie cards for even more savings. Come see us at Casa d'Italia, just across from Jontolo Metro, and visit cinemapublic.ca to discover our programming. Le Cinema Public for a lively cinema.
Tune in to Fukubukuro on Saturdays at 8 p.m. for your weekly grab bag of music from Japan, East Asia, and everywhere else. Only on CJLO 1690 AM.
And white musketeers, foundation deep somehow. Oh, but I was so much older then, I'm younger than that now.
Back here on the Tommy John Show. So we will quickly get into the Toronto Blue Jays and what a weekend it was for them. So they come back from the All-Star break and they just absolutely did what they had to do. They see the Yankees take 2 out of 3 from Atlanta. The Red Sox take 1 from the Cubs on the road and they take care of their own business, Toronto. They sweep the San Francisco Giants in a 3-game series. It was 4-0 shutout. A great performance from Chris Bassitt in that game on Friday night to get the 4-0 win there. Then they pulled off a miraculous win on Saturday. They were struggling in that one, and they scored 2 runs in the 8th inning. Along with, it was 4 in the 6th. They were down early, and they scored 4 in the 6th, 2 in the 8th. To come back and beat the Giants on Saturday. And that was a good performance as well from this Eric Lauer kid who's pitching pretty darn well. Had 7 strikeouts in 6 innings pitched. Then yesterday, they just needed this to keep the Yankees at bay. 3 games back in case that series this week goes south. They are still at least tied with the Yankees. And they took care of business yesterday. And that's a big series, too, for the Giants to lose. They're trying to somehow keep up with the Dodgers and the Padres. Now they fall 6 back. It's going to be an uphill battle for San Francisco to win the NL West. But they're still in the hunt in the wild card. They're still hanging around there. But that is a huge series for the Blue Jays. And now their focus turns towards the New York Yankees for a 3-game series. They get Kevin Gausman on the mound today. Then they'll get Scherzer tomorrow on Tuesday. And in all likelihood, it'll be Chris Bassitt again on Wednesday. So that's a good little pitching weekend for the Blue Jays. You go with Gausman, Scherzer, and Bassitt. Should be a solid little week for the Blue Jays. Remember last time the Yankees were in town, they took 4 games from them. It was a 4-game sweep, and that's when they took lead in the American League East, and they have not looked back since. So huge series this week in Toronto between the Yankees and the Blue Jays. We quickly mentioned the Red Sox. They lost the first 2 games in Chicago. They came back yesterday. They were down 1-0. Abreu hits a 2-run homer. They give them a lead, and then they just poured it on in the later innings to win 6-1. Garrett Crochet putting himself in that Cy Young conversation. I know Tarek Skubal for the Tigers has one hand on the trophy, but Crochet has just been phenomenal, leading the American League in ERA. Just an outstanding, outstanding pitcher he is. And, it was a great pickup by the Red Sox to get him. He's one of the best pitchers already in Major League Baseball, and they have a big series this week against the Phillies. It's a tough stretch for the Red Sox. 3-game series to start off against the Cubs. They go 1-2, but on the road. Then they're at Philadelphia. Then they host the Dodgers. So talk about a wake-up call post the All-Star break. You get 3 of the best teams in all baseball. So there you have it. That's how we go in the American League East. Like we mentioned, the Tigers have won the Central pretty much. They have an 11-game lead over the second-place Cleveland Guardians. We go to the West. It's the Houston Astros, a 4-game lead over the Seattle Mariners, and a 7.5-game lead over the Texas Rangers. To the National League, it is the Phillies who have a 0.5-game lead over the New York Mets. That race is going to come down to the last weekend. We've seen that happen before with them, the Phillies, the Braves. It always seems like the NL East is decided later in the year, so it's going to be the same this year. Don't rule out the Marlins. They're 6-4 in their last 10. Could they try and sneak into a wild card spot? Who will know? But they're playing much better baseball as of late. We mentioned the Cubs. They are tied with the Milwaukee Brewers. And the Brewers, you know what? They're hanging around. Chicago's having a fantastic year. They brought in Kyle Tucker. They have this Crow Armstrong kid who's fantastic. But yesterday, the Brewers, they really needed a big win to get the sweep of the Dodgers, and they got it. They were down 5-4 late in that ball game. They come back and win it. They've won now a few in a row, I'd say. The Brewers are playing fantastic baseball, and they're right there with the Cubs. So they needed help from Boston yesterday, and they got it. The Milwaukee Brewers have won 10 in a row. 10 in a row. And they're beating some good competition. And then they got Seattle this weekend. And they believe they have the Cubs coming up. So they play the Mariners, the Marlins, and then they got three against the Cubs, and then they play the Cubs again a few weeks later at Wrigley Field. So there's a lot of matchups between the Brewers and the Cubs down the stretch where they're going to mean an awful lot based on who wins the NL Central. Quickly to the NL West, we mentioned the Dodgers. They got swept by the Brewers over the weekend. They're 2-8 in their last 10. 2-8 in their last 10. Not a good stretch for the Dodgers. They still have a 3.5 game lead over the Padres. We mentioned they have a 6-game lead over the San Francisco Giants, and that was a killer for the Giants over the weekend. The Dodgers get swept, and you get swept as well, and you've lost 5 in a row. You could have made up some serious ground in the NL West, and instead they go out to Toronto, lose 3 in a row, and don't pick up any ground on the Dodgers at all. The Arizona Diamondbacks are back to 500. They've won 4 in a row, and they're only 8 back of the Dodgers. So that's where we stand. Quickly in the wild card race, Detroit, the number one seed in the American League, followed by Toronto, then Houston. Those are your division leaders. The New York Yankees, the Seattle Mariners, and the Boston Red Sox are your wild card teams right now. Tampa Bay, a game and a half back of the last wild card spot. The Texas Rangers, 3.5 games back of the last wild card spot. The LA Angels at 4 games back, and the Cleveland Guardians, 4.5 games back. Quickly over to the National League, the Cubs and the Brewers are tied with the same record, but based on division and head-to-head, I believe. I'm not sure how they determine that head-to-head. Right now, the Cubs are still in first place in the National League, followed by the Dodgers, then the Phillies. Those are the division leaders. And obviously, the Brewers, the Mets, and the Padres are the three wildcard teams. The Cincinnati Reds, 2.5 games back of the last wildcard spot. The Giants, 2.5 games back. The St. Louis Cardinals, 3.5 games back, and the Arizona Diamondbacks, 4.5 games back in the wild card picture. So it looks like right now, we said it last weekend, stuff has changed a little bit, but not much. I said it's obviously going to be the Dodgers, Cubs, Phillies, Mets, Brewers, and then San Diego, the Giants, Arizona, Cincinnati, and St. Louis will be competing for that last spot, essentially, in the National League. The American League's a little bit more wide open, but I think those are the teams we're going to get. We're going to get Toronto. We're going to get New York. We're going to get Boston. You're going to get the Tigers, and then you're going to get Houston and possibly Seattle. So those are your teams that will make the playoffs in the American League right now. So that's your quick little baseball recap. Big week, like you mentioned, for the Blue Jays. Big week for the Red Sox and the Yankees. The American League East, it's really tightening up right now, and you can't rule out the Tampa Bay Rays as well, who are still hanging around. Quickly to the National Football League. So, we talked about a few weeks ago about Aaron Rodgers being the quarterback of the Pittsburgh Steelers, and once they signed Aaron Rodgers, it was clear what the goal was and what they were trying to do. They're trying to win now. You don't bring in a 41-year-old quarterback who has the baggage that Aaron Rodgers has, and you're not going all in. So when you heard the reports, oh, TJ Watt getting traded, TJ Watt's a trade candidate, anyone with a brain would know that they're not going to trade him. And no matter what TJ Watt wants and what his agent wants, they're going to get a deal done. And sure enough, right on cue, here's the big deal. He becomes the highest paid defensive player annually in the NFL, $41 million a year for 3 years, $123 million. And no one should be surprised. It's same with the Matt Stafford situation. I said it on air. Oh, Stafford's going to get traded. Are you nuts? Stafford's not getting traded. The team's ready to win now. They made investments in the team now. Stafford's not getting traded. He just wants a new contract. TJ Watt wanted a new contract, and the Steelers weren't going to trade him. Ever. Now, if they didn't bring in Aaron Rodgers and they had Will Howard or Mason Rudolph as their quarterback, then yeah, it opens the possibility of them trading TJ Watt. But once they brought in Aaron Rodgers, they bring in DK Metcalf, you trade for Jalen Ramsey and Jonnu Smith, there's no way in hell you're trading TJ Watt. None. So TJ Watt's back. And that defense is going to be a top five defense again. And they just need Aaron Rodgers to play solid football. Turnover free, which is what he used to be. Last year he was a bit careless with the ball, but still better than league average. To me, the Steelers are going to be a decent football team. We've talked about it countlessly on this show, but when I had to hear, oh, T.J. Watt's going to get traded, T.J. Watt's going to get traded. No, he's not. He's not. Why? Why would they do that? They bring in all the players they did, and especially at quarterback, they bring in Aaron Rodgers, and you're going to trade your best player over a couple bucks? It was never going to happen. Now, is this a good deal long-term for the Steelers? No. But who cares? You needed to bring him back, give him what he wants, okay, and then the AAV went up, but the term shrank. We'll give you $41 million a year, but it's 3 years, not a five-year. Okay, signed it. So now T.J. Watt is the most expensive player on the defensive side of the ball in NFL history. He just got past Myles Garrett, who reset the market a few months ago when he wanted out of Cleveland and they got together and got a deal done. But here we are. We're a few weeks away from NFL training camp, and I'm going to give you a list of teams that I think people should watch out for. I really do. So here, we'll start with the NFC. So these are teams that are not in the Philly sphere, not in the Detroit, even the Minnesota and Washington tier. Everyone's seeing those teams, or even the Rams to a degree. These are teams that I look at and think could do some damage in the NFC, then we'll go to the AFC after our next commercial break. But in the NFC, there's one team I look at and I really like, and it's the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I think they're going to have a very good year. Yes, they've made the playoffs the last few years, Tommy's not really going up off on a limb, but no one picks Tampa Bay to win anything. Now, I'm not saying the Bucs are going to win the Super Bowl or anything like that, but I think they can get to a championship game. And you might think I'm crazy, but look at this team. They have one of the best offensive lines in football. They got now two good running backs. Baker Mayfield is playing at a borderline top 10 level, and I understand they lost Liam Cohen to the offensive coordinator to the Jaguars to be their head coach. I understand that, but there's still plenty of talent on this team. Mike Evans is going to be back. We don't know when Chris Godwin will be back, but they drafted this Ibuka kid from Ohio State who always jumped off my screen, thought he was fantastic in college, played big and strong in monumental games, just blocked phenomenally. He caught the ball well, caught it well in traffic, and it wasn't like Will Howard was C.J. Stroud. You know, he's a good player. He's not crazy accurate. He still made acrobatic catches. And I know Jeremiah Smith at Ohio State got all the love last year, but Emeka Ubuka was just as good in big spots. He was that good for Ohio State for the last few years. So adding him to the room as well, that defense is still going to be good under Todd Bowles. Now, that's the one thing that concerns me. I'd like Todd Bowles. I think he's a good NFL head coach, but I find he's too conservative at times. Too conservative at times. And I've mentioned on this show before, and I mentioned it a lot last year, the one thing I find with the Buccaneers is on third down, Todd Bowles' defense cannot get off the field. I've never seen anything like it, especially that Kansas City game on Monday night was the worst example. They had Mahomes and the Chiefs in 3rd and 12, 3rd and 14, 3rd and 8, 3rd and 7, and they could not get off the field. That was the one thing I noticed when watching Tampa Bay. I noticed that as well in the two matchups with Atlanta. They could not get off the field. It was terrible, especially the second Atlanta game when they were at home. Kirk Cousins, who was only good games it felt like last year, were against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They completed third and longs like it was the easiest thing to do. Like third and 11s and third and 13s should not just be, oh, a little check down to the running back and no one's there. Or, oh, maybe let's cover Drake London. Or, oh, let's not just give a quarterback an easy completion for 7 yards and he turns up field. That's what a lot of teams did. They're like, oh, Tampa Bay, third and long. Okay, we're going to check it down short, bite off 8 yards. Now it's 4th and 3. Maybe we can go for it. That's the one thing when I watched Tampa Bay that frustrated me. They just could not get off the field. So maybe Todd Bowles addressed that in the offseason. He better, because it's a frustrating thing. But you look at the roster in general. They still have Cade Otton, a Tristan Wirfs, one of the best players in football's position. I know he'll miss some time to start the year, but this offensive line is going to be one of the league's best. And Bucky Irving came out of nowhere last year from Oregon and was one of the most explosive players in football. To me, Tampa Bay is going to be right there. They're the heavy favorites in the South. I don't know who the hell you would put up there. I know Carolina was a bit better at the end of last year, and Dave Canales did a heck of a job with Bryce Young. They brought in Tet McMillan. The offensive line should be better. Chuba Hubbard showed flashes of being a very good running back in the NFL. And the defense should be much better, too. Carolina's interesting, but they're not on Tampa Bay's level. Then the other team, you have New Orleans. That could be a 3-4 win team this year. They took the kid from Louisville, Tyler Shaulk. We'll see. I'm not a huge fan. I don't think he's going to be the next great Saint quarterback. He's not Drew Brees. He's probably not even Archie Manning. Let's just pump the brakes. I'm not a huge fan of his. I do like Kellen Moore. I think it was a good hire, but to me, he's not the guy in New Orleans. Tyler Shaulk, whatever his name is. He signed his contract finally. Okay. But to me, the Saints are the worst team in that division. And then you look, you have the other one who maybe can compete with them is Atlanta. Atlanta always has firepower. We can go through the offensive depth chart all we want. Bijan Robinson, Kyle Pitts, Drake London. Oh, my God. The list goes on and on. And now you have Michael Penix, who can throw the living heck out of the ball and who played pretty well. People forget that Sunday night game against Washington, he was throwing it with Jaden Daniels that night. And he completed some fourth and longs. They tied the game late, and they lost the coin toss, and that's why they lost the game. And also, Raheem Morris got in the Falcons' way countless times last year. It was crazy. So we'll see what happens on the defensive side of the ball. They still have a very good secondary with Jesse Bates and Terrell. The Falcons are going to be an 8-9 win team again this year. The real question is, can they get those good breaks, which they didn't get last year, to make the postseason? But if you ask me right now, Tampa Bay is the best team in the South. They had Washington on the ropes. I believe in that wild card game, they had the ball up 3 when there was the fumble in their own territory for Tampa Bay. And then Washington took the ball and took the lead, and they didn't look back. So Tampa Bay had their chances in that ball game. 2 years ago, they almost beat the Lions in Detroit in the postseason. Baker Mayfield's playing great in Tampa Bay, really fits that market. Borderline top 10 quarterback since joining Tampa Bay. He was second in the NFL in touchdowns, I believe, last year behind Burrow. So to me, Tampa Bay's one team we got to watch out for that could give Philadelphia some problems. Obviously, Minnesota, we can go on and on about Minnesota. A lot of people aren't sure about J.J. McCarthy. Listen, I'm not the biggest J.J. McCarthy fan either based on what I saw at Michigan, but I think Kevin O'Connell's a quarterback whisperer. He made Sam Darnold get a $120 million contract from Seattle. They were 14-3 with Sam Darnold. So, to me, Minnesota is going to be a playoff team, and I love what they did in the offseason. They upgraded the offensive line. They upgraded the secondary. They still have Brian Flores there. Minnesota is going to be a good football team. That division is going to be tough. Green Bay is going to be good. Detroit, obviously, is still very talented. And now you have Ben Johnson in Chicago trying to help Caleb Williams out. And if people forget about the Bears, sure, they lose Keenan Allen, but they drafted this Luther Burden kid from Missouri at the top of the second round, who is an explosive player. A year ago, before his last year at Missouri, he was going to be a top 10 pick, possibly. Did not have the greatest year, and a lot of that has to do with Missouri's play calling, and apparently has not the greatest attitude. But if you look at him on the field, he just pops off your screen when you watch him. So they're going to have him and DJ Moore, and they took the kid Loveland in the top 10 with Cole Kmet. They traded for Joe Tooney, and they signed the other center from Atlanta. They invested in the offensive line. I believe Jonah Jackson came over from the Rams. This is a very good football team on paper. Not to mention that defense still has Sweat, still has Johnson, still has key players on that defense. And the Bears, on paper, are going to be a very good team. But that division's tough, and the conference is tough. Philly just won the Super Bowl relatively easily and are the most talented team by a mile. Washington with the rookie quarterback made the NFC Championship game. We mentioned Minnesota. We mentioned Detroit, who were the number one seed in the NFC a year ago. Green Bay are going to play well. The Rams people love this year. They bring in Devontae Adams after almost beating the Eagles in the postseason on the road. San Francisco's healthy again and has one of the easiest schedules in football. We mentioned Tampa Bay. There's only so many spots. So I think the Bears are going to have a good year. Do I think they'll make the playoffs? I don't know. Because to me, they on paper, they are the fourth best team in their division. I think Detroit's better than them. Minnesota's better than them. Green Bay's better than them. So that leaves them fourth in the division. They could still make the wild card, theoretically, if all those other teams make the playoffs. But you like to think Washington and Philly get in? What about Dallas? What about the Niners and the Rams? Do you think both of those teams are going to get in? Can Atlanta challenge Tampa Bay? To me, the NFC, there's more possibilities there. You go to the AFC, Buffalo's winning the East. Kansas City, in all likelihood, will win the West. Baltimore, Cincinnati in the North. The North's the toughest one to call. And then you go to the South, and it's Houston. The AFC, we know who are the good teams, and then the wild card teams kind of shift in and out. To me, the AFC West is the best of the bunch for the wild card teams because I don't trust Cincinnati's defense at all. Their offense is going to score. They're going to score 30 a game. Will they make the playoffs? I don't know. That defense, to me, has not been fixed in the slightest. So we shall see, but to me, the higher end of the AFC is better, but once you get past the Buffaloes, the Kansas Cities, the Baltimores. If you want to lump Houston in there, okay. If you want to lump the Bengals in there, even though they didn't make the playoffs last year, okay. But after that, it's a lot of unknowns. The Steelers are there in Rodgers. They'll have a good defense. Unknown. The Browns stink. The AFC South stinks. The AFC West, Chargers, Broncos should be good. The Raiders are an unknown. But you look at the NFC, Philadelphia, Washington, the entire North, Tampa Bay, Atlanta, the Rams, the 49ers, Arizona has playoff aspirations. Seattle gave Sam Darnold over $100 and some million. So to me, the NFC is a lot more complex, and I don't know exactly how it's going to go down. The AFC, I will tell you right now, Buffalo makes the playoffs. Kansas City makes the playoffs. The Ravens make the playoffs. Houston's winning the South. And then your playoff teams are probably going to be the Chargers, the Broncos, and then it's either Cincinnati or Pittsburgh. Maybe New England, but I doubt it. There's the AFC. I'm not buying the Colts. I'm not buying Cam Ward yet. He's going to be good, I believe. But to make the playoffs in his first year, probably not. Not buying Jacksonville as of yet. Who else? The Browns, no. The Dolphins stink. The Jets stink. The Patriots, we don't know. Like the AFC, we're going to get to the postseason, and it's going to be Mahomes, Allen, Jackson, probably the Texans. And Burrow should be there, but the defense just can't help themselves. The NFC, I don't know. I think Tampa Bay is going to win the South, but Atlanta's still there. The NFC West, I think the Rams are going to win, but the Niners have the easiest schedule in the league and are healthy. The NFC North, there's four teams that could win that division, and then now you have a rivalry in the East between Washington and Philadelphia. Who's going to win there? Probably Philadelphia, but there's going to be a rivalry, and Dallas is always an event by itself. Are they going to make some noise? Dak's healthy. CeeDee Lamb says the team's ready to roll. They should be able to lock up Micah Parsons. Maybe Schottenheimer's better than we think. To me, the NFC is way more complex than the AFC. The AFC just have such elite quarterback play that we know who's going to be there in the end. Allen and Mahomes and Lamar, they're all going to be there in the divisional round at the end. Who the hell knows in the NFC? We have no idea. But my teams I said to watch out for in the NFC were Tampa Bay, Minnesota, Chicago. I think those are three teams, aside from, okay, Philadelphia and Washington and Detroit and the Rams. Okay, we all know that. I'm just telling you stuff you don't know. Like, come on, really? To me, Tampa Bay is going to be a huge factor in the NFC this year. I think Minnesota, people are forgetting that O'Connell can do this with anyone. They had Josh Dobbs on a day's notice win a football game for them. So, I mentioned McCarthy at Michigan wasn't asked to do a whole lot, but the moment won't faze him. He played at Michigan. He won a national championship. He went into hostile environments. He won't be flustered by the moment. That's why I like big school quarterbacks for that purpose. Not saying they all can play, but they're not scared of the crowd and the limelight. They've been playing in front of 100,000 for their whole college career. So to me, McCarthy, if he just doesn't turn the ball over, gives it to Jefferson, gives it to Addison, TJ Hawkinson. They brought in the Mason kid, the running back from San Francisco, who put up good numbers to go along with Aaron Jones. They invested in the offensive line. You have O'Connell calling the plays. To me, it's like, how can you mess this up? How can you mess this up? So those are the three teams to watch out for. I'm not buying Arizona as of yet. Seattle, their defense should be okay. Let's see Darnold without Kevin O'Connell. And then I have no time for the Giants. Their Giants defense will be good. Their pass rush will be very good. Jackson Dart, Russell Wilson, that doesn't do anything for me. We're going to take our last break. When we come back, we'll talk quickly about the AFC and who I think can surprise people there come NFL season. I'm Tommy Lane for the Tommy John Show. Back after this quick word from our sponsors. Do not go away.
The Festival International Nuit d'Afrique, presented by TD, invites you to the 39th edition for the best of world music, from July 8th to 20th. For 13 days, Montreal will be dancing and singing to the rhythms of Africa, the Caribbean, and Latin America. Full program and tickets on festivalnuitdafrique.com.
Do you want to have a discussion about movies?
All right, gang, let's really nail it this time. Here we go.
And have the iconic sounds of cinema? Bum.
We'll tune in to At the Movies with Iconic Sounds every Tuesday from 8 to 9 a.m.
Only on CJLO 1690 a.m. in Montreal with your hosts Remy
and Danny.
This is how we do it.
Da, 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 da.
Hey, I never asked you.
Yeah.
Do you like guacamole? Oh, run! Oh, God! Run!
Back here for the last few minutes here on the Tommy John Show. So quickly to the AFC, we mentioned teams that could surprise some people. Listen, to me, the AFC is not that surprising. We all know that the AFC West is going to be good. We know the AFC North is going to be good, and the other two divisions aren't as good. Like, let's just be honest. The South stinks. The AFC East, as a Patriots fan, I love for my Patriots to be a tad better. They will be. I think Vrabel will give them a coaching bump. Drake May with an actually good offensive coordinator and Josh McDaniels. They invested in the offensive line. The Patriots are going to be a better football team. Are they going to be a playoff team? I don't know. You have the Ravens, Steelers, Bengals competing for those spots. You have Buffalo, who are still better than you, obviously. And then not to mention, you have the AFC West with the Chiefs, the Chargers, the Broncos, who all made the playoffs last year, and then the Raiders brought in Pete Carroll, Ashton Gentry, Chip Kelly to be the OC. So to me, those teams are all in a better spot than New England, not to mention the Houston Texans have one of the great defenses in football as well. So there you have it for this week. To me, there's no really big surprises. I'm interested to see Jacksonville, Travis Hunter. I'm interested to see Cam Ward in Tennessee, but to me, those teams aren't winning the Super Bowl or making the playoffs this year. To me, that's too much of a stretch. I don't see a Washington in the AFC this year. Thank you guys for listening. We'll be back next Monday, 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern, right here on CGLO 1690 a.m. Thank you guys for listening, and we'll be back next Monday.
You're listening to CGLO.